This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
As the head of an international institute on beliefs and values, Craig Sheely examines attitudes toward relationships around the world. As a clinical therapist, he also helps couples heal troubled relationships. Communication researcher Jennifer Gill Rozier has long been fascinated by what works and what doesn't between couples, especially when it comes to, well, communication. So we figured if we get Dr. Rozier and Dr. Sheely together in the same room, the potential for relationship-related insight might be pretty impressive. Of course, if you've got ideas about what makes for a successful relationship and what doesn't, your perspective will be most welcome, too, when we begin our conversation about making love work right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Making relationships work is the topic of our focus today. And if you've got ideas about that, maybe some hard-won lessons you'd be willing to share, or a question or two, you're most welcome to join this hour's conversation at 888-WMRA-TALK. Seriously, you cannot be more clueless about the keys to successful relationships than is the host of this program. So nothing to be embarrassed about. If the topic today was gardening, you'd be willing to call in for advice, right? Well, the same thing for making love grow. Same number, too, 888-967-2825. Here to help, Craig Sheely, clinical psychologist, as well as Jennifer Gill Rozier, communication researcher and author. Thank you both for making time for us.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Well, Jenny, I have to start with you first because we need to address the first question that you always get whenever anybody hears about your new book, Make Love, Not Scrapbooks. Really? Make Love, Not Scrapbooks? There's got to be a story behind that title.
There is. So I have to start off by saying that I am not a anti-scrapbooker. I actually enjoy scrapbooking very much. If you come to my home, you will see I have several dozen scrapbooks that are very eloquently made. So I really do like scrapbooking. I'm not a anti-scrapbook person. But when I was starting to write this book, I was sitting around with my husband and we were talking about the title of the book, because for some reason I really like to know the title of something before I start working on it. And we were tossing around some ideas and I wanted it to be cute and catchy, and Make Love Not War was thrown out there. And I said, well, you know, I don't really talk about war, so I don't think that that would be a good title. But you know what? Maybe I should look at something that people do a lot of that I think that they should avoid doing, because that's what Make Love Not War is. Don't have war and instead make love. So what do people do? And since women tend to be readers of self-help books like this, I decided to Google top women activity or hobby. And I went down the list and it was like quilting and crocheting. Make Love Not Crocheting didn't sound very good. And then running and baking, and then scrapbooks. Mm. And it said that it was a multi-million dollar industry, and that, you know, some large amount of women all across the country scrapbook. And I said, Make Love Not Scrapbooks. That works. I like it. That's great. And then I started thinking there's all these other meanings behind this title, you know? It's not just about something that women like to do, scrapbooking. It's this metaphor of people spending time doing other things and putting their relationships on the back burner. And so we're consuming our lives with all of our hobbies and activities, and we're forgetting about the things that are really, really important, and that is our relationships. And so I don't want people to stop scrapbooking or stop doing their activities. Just work on your relationship, work on your marriage, and, you know, don't spend so much time doing all of those extra things.
Well, I should mention that there is a subtitle, so that if I was to read the full title of the book correctly, it is Make Love Not Scrapbooks and 9 Other Research-Based Love Tips to Intensify Your Relationship. And that part about research-based love tips is really right on target, because
Well, tell us how you got started with the blog that you did for several years mm-hmm. that eventually led to this book.
So as a graduate student, I would read journal articles all the time, and I come from humble beginnings, and journal articles are a tad stuffy to me. And so I was looking for a way to make scholarly research translational so that the average Joe could read it and understand what these smart people all over the world were doing. And that's when blogging was really popular in 2008. And so I decided, hey, I think I could write a blog. And each post, I could take a journal article and explain it so that real people could understand it, because this stuff is important. And if real people can't understand it, then, you know, how are they ever going to know what to do? So I started blogging, and I got a lot of followers, and people started really liking my mix of my personal life and research. And so I decided to write a book. I said, let's take some of these ideas. I took some of the posts that were the most popular, that were read the most frequently, or the topics that were the most popular, and I expanded them and added more research and added more stories and turned them into 10 love tips that I think are really important.
But they are based on scholarly research.
Oh,
they
yeah.
just don't come across in the language that you might expect to see in a scholarly journal.
Exactly. Yeah. I have some, you know, cute titles. I mean, Make Love Not Scrapbooks is one of them. It's the sex chapter. It's a good chapter. You need to have active, and the kicker is satisfying sex life. You can't just have a lot of sex. It's got to be good sex. So.
Chapter 7, by the way. And we may be discussing Chapter 7 in some detail later in the hour. If we get close to that, we'll give a warning ahead of time in case there are tender ears you want to get away from your radio. But also, Jenny, you have, well, in the promos mm-hmm. for today's broadcast, we talked about a five-word phrase that's mm-hmm. something of a running theme in your book.
Yes.
And it's something that you say is especially powerful in maintaining and building success in a love relationship. Now, truth be told, this could be called a four or a five-word phrase, depending on whether you start with I am or the contraction I'm at the beginning of the phrase. But please tell us the full phrase and why you think it's so important.
So the full phrase is, I am on your team. And anyone who knows me, who's listening right now, knows that I say that all of the time. Being on the same team as your partner is so very, very important to having your partner's back, supporting your partner's dreams and aspirations, playing on his or her team so that he or she feels special all of the time and feels supported by you is just wildly important to keeping your union a successful union.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking a little bit before the show about this, and I completely agree with that. And it mm-hmm. sort of is like in the work I do with couples and families or with students who are trying to learn how to do this work, mm-hmm. that goal of a couple being able to say, yeah, we are on the same team, when we've reached that mm-hmm. and they feel it and they act like that and say it, that often is a major criterion that we've mm-hmm. actually done the work that we hoped we could do.
I'm sure it can be a turning point in the therapy.
Not only is it a turning point, it's sometimes an end point. Yeah. And meaning that truly that when they get to the point where they can feel that and say that and as important, act like that.
Mean it.
Then mm-hmm. it's sort of like, okay, then, you know, now you know this, you feel this, you see this, you're living it, you're mm-hmm. living it. And mm-hmm. my work is done,
you mm-hmm. know,
so in many ways, because a lot of the folks I see, the idea of being on the same team is they don't even know that there's a team they can be on.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Oh, you know, there are a lot of reasons. Oftentimes, we were talking about this as well before the show. Oftentimes they're never really ready. They were never ready to leave the team they were on before they got married. They didn't even know that they were on another team, but it was their family of origin, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get married, and their loyalties really are to their former, what should be their former teammates, at least primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so their new, whatever position game we're talking about, but their teammates, whatever, now, as in their partner, feels a constant sense that their partner really isn't with them fundamentally, especially mm-hmm. on the big questions, the big issues, mm-hmm. When there's tension or stress. And so that not infrequently, that's a real flashpoint of conflict between couples is yeah. whose team are you on?
So yeah, I like to say that you have one team. And then when you couple with someone, you should leave that team and move to the new team. You can still cheer for the other team.
Yes.
You can still cheer for your parents' team. You can still root them on,
yeah.
but you cannot moonlight.
Yeah.
You cannot play on their team.
Yeah.
You can help them, and you can say good job when they mm-hmm. have successes, and mm-hmm. you can help them when they have failures, but you cannot play on their team. There's only one team to play on.
Yeah.
You have to have your team members back.
Yeah, those loyalties, though, too,
mm-hmm.
that are often unknown to people. They don't even know that they, in the clinical technical term of a lack of differentiation, for
yeah.
example, from their family of origin, they don't even know that they're that.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that issue comes up and they feel torn between their partner and their family, let's say,
mm-hmm.
The partner often feels like you always choose your
mm-hmm.
family over me and the kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a real, but the person who's doing it often doesn't even know they're doing
don't
it.
Even recognize
they don't know it.
It
or they don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
And they just feel a deep sense of conflict. And so it can often be a source of real pain.
Psychologist Craig Sheely is director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute. Communication researcher Jennifer Gill Rozier is author of the book Make Love, Not Scrapbooks, and 9 other research-based love tips to intensify your relationship. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Now, here are the chapter titles in Jenny's book. Be supportive. Generate some blushing. Talk. Contemplate, decide, astonish. Don't worry, be happy. Laugh. The famous chapter 7, Make Love, Not Scrapbooks. Heart the hell out of your mate. Add in a dash of spice. And chapter 10, Manage That Conflict. So we probably are not going to have time to get to all of those topics during the hour ahead. But if you've heard something in them that you want more detail about, then you can help direct this conversation when you call us at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on the Virginia Insight Facebook page. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Or if you have a question or comment about anything else to do with relationships, we'd be pleased to hear your voice as well. Jenny, I understand that one of your favorite topics in this book
mm-hmm.
has to do with communication. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 3. Tell us some of the highlights from the talk chapter.
It's one of the largest chapters, surprise, surprise. But I would say that in it, I talk about how you need to talk about your relationship. You need to have an open, constant, frequent conversation with your partner, a running conversation. My husband and I are not talking at this moment, but we have a running conversation with each other. We finished our last conversation, and our next one will pick up where the last one ended. We have this running, open conversation with each other that is constant. You have to have that. You have to check in during the day and talk to each other. Even if it's just 5 minutes, you need to have that communication. You need to talk about your day with each other, whether it's positive or negative. Whether you just need to vent about what happened or you want to talk about all the joyful things that happened that day. I also, in that chapter, talk about things that you should discuss before you tie the knot. So you need to talk about money. You need to talk about children. You need to talk about chores. You need to talk about sex and how you're going to divvy things up in your relationship and how you're going to manage conflict. All of those things are really important to talk about.
We're talking about making love work with Jennifer Gill Rozier and Craig Sheely. And I have no idea why I'm talking like this, but we'll continue in just a bit more than 1 minute. Aspirational music, I think we could call it, from Colby Calais, Brighter Than the Sun. Have you ever had a relationship that qualified that way? Have you yearned for one? Do you have some ideas on how to create one or questions about same? We've got a phone number for you, 888-WMRA-TALK. We've also got a place on Facebook where you can post a question or comment for us. We're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Jenny Gill Rozier has been writing the Jen's Love Lessons blog for many years now. It started in part because she was discovering such intriguing ideas about communication and relationships in her doctoral research, and she wanted to translate those findings into everyday language that most anyone could follow. She does much the same thing in her day job as an assistant professor of communication studies at James Madison University. Craig Sheely is a faculty member in the graduate psychology department at JMU, and as a clinical psychologist, also does a fair amount of work as a couples therapist, but he is probably best known around the world as the head of the International Beliefs and Values Institute based in Stanton, Virginia. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. And Craig, I do at some point hope that we can get into whether there are differences from all that you've seen in other cultures around the world and attitudes towards relationships and what works in relationships. But I got to get back to something that we were hearing from Jenny just before the break, because I believe that there may be differences here in our own society, in the culture of women versus the culture of men. This thing about talk. You ever hear guys say, all she wants to do is talk, and sometimes I just want to sit and be quiet?
Yeah. I don't know if I ever don't hear guys say that. That tends to be a huge issue in relationships, is the styles that males and females bring to their relationships, if we're talking heterosexual relationships. And it often, the world that women occupy in their relationships and in their heads, often males, and I'm stereotyping to a degree because there is a lot of variability at this level. But the couples I see, which of course represent couples where it's not working often as well as they want, this is a very consistent pattern of men. Not only are they not able to really talk about the kind of that wonderful example you gave, Jenny, of sort of this running dialogue, running communication that healthy couples have, and I so agree with that. They don't even know how to start such a thing, and a lot of that comes down to the fact that I from my perspective at least, and what I've read and seen, that men are socialized so badly around paying attention to what really drives the desire for that ongoing running communication, which is their emotional world, the needs that they have that relationships can meet. And if you're not in touch with that, and or you're alarmed about it, or you're scared of those vulnerabilities, it's very difficult for guys to really talk about things that they don't understand very well. And so the women are often very frustrated because they know, or they feel, or there'll be enough clues that there's this rich life or a potentially a rich life inside their mates, and yet they can't get in touch with it or won't get in touch with it or deny that it's there. And so that is, again, it's a bit of a stereotype, but it's a very consistent pattern at the same time.
Yeah, and it's not that men are incapable of having the conversations. Clearly, I'm on the radio with two men right now, and you guys are perfectly capable of having a lot of conversation. So,
but I have notes.
But it's not that men are incapable by any means. Men are perfectly capable of talking, and women are perfectly capable of being silent. It's that we're socialized with our culture that men are not expected to talk about their feelings, and men are not expected, and it's even not even that it's not expected, but that it's looked down upon in some areas, that if a man expresses himself emotionally, then, you know, we could go as far as, you know, being outcasted or ostracized or sexuality being questioned.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
So there's a lot of pressure for men to communicate in a certain way. It's not that they can only communicate in that way. It's that the pressure is very strong, the cultural pressure.
I completely agree. The problem, though, is that by the time they even adolescence rolls around, that capability, which I agree theoretically is there and is there in potential,
it's dampened.
But it's become sort of what I would say sort of structurally inaccessible. So they can't reach that anymore. And so there's this barrier around it, which they're
without
frustrated
significant
by.
Work.
Without and that's the good news is that it doesn't have to be even with a therapist. It can be some of the I love this love tips concept in your book, but you know, those kinds of things are just taking the risk. Often what I will say to clients when I see them, or even students in class when we talk about these issues, a male student just a little while ago in class said, how do I avoid this? I'd given an example of a relational problem that hadn't worked. And this individual said, how in God's name do I avoid that happening in my life? And my response was, you pay attention to what you feel and you value it and you start trying to articulate what those feelings are.
And his mind was blown.
Well, he just and we talked in some depth, and it was like, you know, the whole it sparked a lot of dialogue. But
so
I agree that they're capable, but
but
they've learned, you know, all kinds of lessons, and it can be very intimidating and frightening for guys to do that. So
okay, before I describe why I disagree with some of what I'm hearing, I'm going to ask if there's anybody listening, particularly let's say anybody female, who has discovered a way to get men or the man, if you have one in your life, to talk in a way that you find encouraging, even satisfying. If you'd be willing to share that experience with us, what the strategy was, what you've discovered works, we'd love to hear from you at 888-967-2825, 888-WMRA-TALK, as we continue our conversation with psychologist Craig Sheely and communication researcher Jennifer Gill Rozier. On the other hand, maybe there's a male in the audience who has some disagreement, as I do, with what you've just heard, and would say, you know, there are circumstances I know where I'm willing to talk, and when I hear other guys talk, and this is what I think may not happen when we try to communicate with women. So if you want to offer anything along those lines or anything else related to what you're hearing, please feel free to call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. My disagreement, Craig and Jenny, comes from both personal experience and a lot of what I've read from sociologists and cultural anthropologists looking at different communication styles between men and women. And one of the best examples that I've heard is that oftentimes the block in communication between male and female is similar to the block in communication between parent and teenager. And what these researchers say is so often there is implied in parent to teenager some form of communication criticism that the teenager feels like, I'm not going to tell you what I'm thinking or I'm feeling because you're going to tell me that I'm wrong. You're going to keep treating me like I'm a 5-year-old.
Too, completely.
And that when you take that block away, when all of a sudden the teenager feels like no matter what they say, they're going to get some degree of support, they'll say a lot.
It goes back to the team member thing. If you believe that you are on the same team as your partner, you are at an equal playing field as your partner, you're probably more likely to communicate.
But I think there's also, because as Craig was mentioning, Jenny, different communication styles between men and women. I mean, I can sit down and talk with men and be amazed at the depth of the conversation between the guys about sometimes very emotional, sensitive, vulnerable things, but they communicate in a way different than if I sat down and heard a group of women. And so sometimes I wonder if there's something that we can do to get past that block that has to do with how we listen. Male to female and female to male. But before I ask you to expound on that theory, let's take Polly's call from Stanton. Polly, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Dr. Craig Sheely and or Dr. Jenny Gill-Rozier, please.
Hi, I just have a quick comment that I learned in graduate school for counseling at ODU in a family therapy course I took. And I ended up never doing family therapy, but I remembered this one bit of advice, which was, of course, a little bit stereotyping, but really kind of true. Ask a man how he feels, and he'll tell you what he thinks. However, ask him what he thinks, he'll end up telling you what he feels. And I think that's true to a great extent, particularly for men who are uncomfortable with saying, oh, I feel so, you know, that seems female to them. So their habit is to quickly go into their head and say, I think da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Or they may not even say, I think, but they are thinking rather than feeling. So if you come across in a less threatening way and say, gee, what do you think about that? They're more comfortable, they'll open up, and they'll tell you what they feel.
I think that's great. That's a really great tip.
Yes.
Just asking someone about their thoughts as opposed to their emotions.
Yes.
That's a great way to get around that idea.
Yeah, I think that both on that point and the point that Tom raised, that, you know, if I had on the flip side, a common theme that comes up around issues of communication and feelings and all that, it is the feeling that men have often of being criticized. That they're lesser, that they're falling short somehow, and that they're not doing what it is that they're expected to do, and they don't know how to talk about that. Or they feel like when they try to, they're so outgunned by sort of the verbal, shot at them that they just shut down and back off. And, of course, all these things can go both ways. We're talking about trends. But and the other thing is that, you know, males are sort of taught also to kind of problem solve. And so if I hear a complaint from women, it's that, geez, I'm not asking for a solution to this issue. I don't need you to tell me how to solve it.
I just want to vent.
I just want you to hear what I have to say. And for guys, that can sometimes feel like, well, why are you doing this? I mean, this is what's the point of this? You
exactly.
know, we can solve this quickly if we just did X. And they're like, I'm not looking for you to solve the problem. I just want you to know what's going on inside.
I don't want your advice. I just want to talk.
I've heard that a gazillion times. Yeah.
Polly, such an excellent tip you gave us. Before you leave us, do you have a question of any kind?
No, that just, when I heard your question, that little tidbit of advice occurred to me, so I thought I'd share it.
I'm so glad. Thanks for joining
in. Thank you.
It's great.
Bye-bye.
Our guest, psychologist Craig Sheely, director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, communication researcher Jennifer Gill-Rozier, author of the book Make Love, Not Scrapbooks, and 9 other research-based love tips to intensify your relationship. In a few moments, we're probably going to have to talk a little bit about Chapter 7. So if there's anyone who has tender ears nearby that you don't want hearing about the bedroom aspects of making love, this might be a good time to get them a little bit further away from the radio. Craig, I think every man listening who has ever tried to be in a relationship with a female by now has heard that idea that oftentimes women don't want our first response, which is a solution, which is what we discuss with other guys.
Right.
They just want somebody who's going to listen and empathize as they describe whatever the problem or the issue is. What I'm not sure that there are lots of women who have heard that the most frequent complaint, I think, comes from men is that when I, as a male, try to describe a frustration or an issue that's important to me, the most common reaction from the woman I'm talking to is to tell me a similar circumstance. And oftentimes to males, that feels like we are being cut short. That when women talk to each other and they give examples, what I've heard psychologists say is it's a way of showing empathy.
And building relationships.
Right. But when men talk to each other, they don't try to give another example unless they're trying to top one another.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me what else is on the research realm in this area.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's so easy in discussions like this to overgeneralize on the mm-hmm. one hand. And I often think about the issue of within versus between group differences. So one point I would just offer up is that there's more variation within the genders than there is between them, I would argue, on these issues. So meaning that there's more of the – there's more variation, there's more difference among women, and there's more variation and difference among men than there is between them fundamentally on some of the issues that we're talking about. So I just want to sort of make that observation. The end of the day is kind of what I look at, really.
Mm-hmm. The
bottom line is sort of – so, you know, we can talk about these differences and the frustrations that – men and women have with one another, or men and men, or women and women, or whatever the configuration is. But what we, at the end of the day, what we're really trying to get at is a couple being able, in whatever way they communicate, to be known to the other, mm-hmm. to have a sense of, I know who you are. I know why you are who you are.
I'm in tune with you.
Yes, and, mm-hmm. and I know what you want. And as Jenny said, you know, and I'm on your team. Mm-hmm. And I think the process of creating safety between couples has mm-hmm. to involve some sort of dialogue. Whatever the style is, whatever the gender-based nature of that is, dialogue is the way that occurs. And sometimes it's not a lot of words. Sometimes it often is in fact, some of the most powerful moments I've had with couples in therapy is no one's saying anything, mm-hmm. but they're looking at one another mm-hmm. in a particular way.
It's about the quality, not necessarily the quantity.
Absolutely. Yes.
So chapter 7,
mm-hmm.
the Making Love chapter.
Yes.
Specifically titled Make Love, Not Scrapbooks. Mm-hmm. In essence, what you seem to be saying, Jenny Rozier, mm-hmm. is that couples should be having sex a lot more often than most do. And I wonder if I'm reading that accurately, if you get more disagreement from women on that than you get from men.
Well, I have to say that the issue is not necessarily having more sex. The key here is to have more sex and for it to be good sex. Mm. You have to have an active and satisfying sex life, not just an active one. And so whatever that means for each couple could be very different. Mm. So an active and satisfying sex life may be once a week for one couple or once every 2 weeks for one couple and every day for another couple or once a month for another couple. So it's really about the active and satisfying component. And in the chapter, I really talk about all of the benefits to an active and satisfying sex life, the health benefits, the relationship benefits, and then some common complaints that people have or some common reasons why people don't have sex with their partners. You know, like, we're too busy or I just can't get in the mood. Well, guess what? If you are going to wait until both of you are totally in the mood, you might be waiting a long time.
Well, you've also done some research on getting people to talk to each other about sex.
Exactly.
So we might have time to talk about that a little bit when we get back from the break.
Sounds good.
Steve Miller.
Miller getting us in the mood to continue our conversation specifically about bedroom aspects of Make Love, Not Scrapbooks. A warning, just in case you've just tuned in, that we are going to talk for a couple minutes more about things related to stuff that you may not want tender ears to hear, but it'll only be a couple minutes. So if you want them to step away from the radio and then come back, that would be fine. I should mention that former theater major Craig Sheely is one of our guests.
I'm not sure
when he left the education track to pursue psychology, but the ability to stand on stage and speak to people still serves him well as he travels the world now in his role as executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute based at Mary Baldwin College. Dr. Sheely is also a professor of graduate psychology at James Madison University, as well as a clinical therapist in private practice. Former business major Jennifer Gill Rozier stays reasonably busy too. Her switch to communication research eventually led to her current post as a faculty member at JMU's Communication Studies Department. Plus, she's a writer of the Jen's Love Lessons blog, as well as author of the book Make Love, Not Scrapbooks. By the way, she's also the mother of three and a half year old twins and an 8 month old baby boy. So this whole thing about being too busy.
We make time.
It sounds like both of you know something about staying busy.
Yeah, definitely. I think that what it comes down to is that you have to make the time. You have to make the time, even if it's not for sexual intercourse per se, but just intimacy with your partner. Whether it's physical intimacy, emotional intimacy, you have to make the time. You cannot build a strong relationship without it. It's not possible. So you need to make the time, whether you're only one of you is in the mood or you feel like you don't have time or you feel like you're busy, you have to make the time.
Yeah, sex, I mean, geez, that's got to be, you know, the two biggies often are thought of as sex and money and relationships and conflict. And sex is a really interesting one because it's as personal as it gets.
Exactly. And
oftentimes, yet again, is an extremely difficult thing for couples to talk about. So I love it, Jenny, that you emphasize that they should talk about that out loud before even, as you say, tying the knot. I think a lot of the time again, these differences for men and women are so interesting because for males, so much of their sense of self identity is tied up in these ideas of prowess and power and strength. And that often masks what I see a lot in the therapy room is masks often a lot of insecurity and fundamental questions about how are they experienced by their spouse? Are they seen as masculine by their partner? And how would they know that? So I see that. On the other hand, for women, the traditional, we're talking about problems here, not solutions, and we can get to both. But for women, what I hear a lot is that and these are marriages often or long-term relationships is that, you know, he wants more than she does is a chronic refrain. And there's all kinds of debate around that issue and all that. But that is a common refrain. And so I love the idea of your concept of intimacy that I just saw a couple the other day. And the wife commented that when she felt cared for and protected and like she was needed, she felt much more open and desirous of all forms of intimacy, including the kinds that he really wanted.
Exactly. I mean, even sitting next to each other on the couch instead of sitting in separate chairs, you know, or on separate ends of the couch, sit next to each other, touch each other. You're married.
Right.
Come on.
Rub feet. You
exactly.
Know, do what
you
do need
something.
To do. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And little playful touches throughout the day, you know, to get yourself ready for that night, you know? Yeah. I mean, you need to do those things.
Corey from Edinburgh's been hanging on the line here.
Okay.
But hopefully he'll be patient for a moment longer because I promised we were going to hear at least a little bit about what your research shows on how people can approach talking about sex more successfully.
Okay.
Got a quick tip for us?
I do. So I think that there has to be that open communication conversation already. You have to be willing to have the conversation. And that can take some time, but you need to be open to have the conversation. Once you are there, I think that just writing down a list of your 5 sexual likes and your 5 sexual dislikes and sharing them with your partner.
And then
that's
burning
the
it. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I think when I did my dissertation work on the sexual coaching training program, the number one comment I got from women was, I've never had anyone ask me what my 5 sexual likes were. I've never written them down before. It took me a long time to figure this out. But once I did, it was great. I felt awesome just saying that I knew what they were and that my husband then knew what they were. So there's a great tip. There's a starting point. Yeah. Write them down. 5 likes, 5 dislikes, share them.
Yeah, and I just want to build on that quickly because one thing that men desperately want to know
is what
the women, or you know, in a homosexual context, what the partner wants.
Exactly.
And so for men, being able to please and fulfill that demonstrates the very thing that they, to them, the very thing that they want to know most. Again, these are generalizations, but that I am a man that can do that, and you want me to do
and
that.
And I know what it is.
Yes, exactly. And
just
so
I'm
not fooling around and you know, screwing it all up.
Yeah, just having the knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Corey in Edinburgh, hopefully it was worth waiting. Your question or comment for Dr. Craig Sheely and or Dr. Jennifer Gill-Rozier, please.
Well, I want to thank you all for being on this program, and it's interesting to hear a woman and man's point of view, and you are so right. Communication, and I was married young, and I happened to be my marriage went for 30 years, and I thought we were happily married, but I want to let you know that what I thought, what my wife thought, were two different things, and they're very far apart. And I woke up to that way too late. But I want you to both know, or all of us need to know, that you know it takes a very responsible, mature man or woman to be involved in a healthy relationship.
Yep, it does.
Sure does.
I have been involved in a lot of unhealthy relationships, and I can tell you that I have a part to me that is unhealthy, and my unhealthiness says, one, people are going to make me happy all the time, especially a woman. That is, those pressures are too great for anybody, you know.
Yes.
And the other one is men tend to use sex as more of a getaway from their problems than a beautiful thing that it is. In other words, the man wants
a release.
You know, it's almost like a man, I can only speak from a man's point of view, but honestly speaking, I saw this after I was quite older and I had been through a 30-year marriage and then some other relationships. It's like, Corey, you're using women to make yourself feel better. And so I love the idea of a healthy relationship, but I want you to know that it takes a person that has won. We're none of us are perfect, but our insecurities and our jealousy and our envy cannot get in the way. Love grows in places those things don't exist.
That's very true.
And I learned that the hard way. So it's nice thinking of Valentine's Day. I want you to know I was married to this beautiful woman for 30 years. I had 6 beautiful daughters. And that woman, I pushed that woman out of my life. I drove her out of my life because I just didn't know how to be a big boy. And it took her leaving and me going through some other disasters. And I realized, Corey, you can't make somebody... You can't fill that hole inside of you with
no. You definitely can't. The only hole that you can fill is the relationship hole. You can't fill all the other holes.
Corey, thank you so much for sharing part of your story with us. We've got a couple minutes left to take calls. If anybody is brave enough to tell us what their question about making a successful relationship might be, then do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or if, like Polly, our caller earlier, you have another hard-won, hard-learned lesson that you want to share, we'd be happy to hear from you, too, at 888-WMRA-TALK. Jennifer Gill-Rozier, you said that when you were working on the title, Make Love, Not War, obvious that that wasn't going to be a good title. Eventually ended up with Make Love, Not Scrapbooks. But there is, I wouldn't call it war, there is a very important chapter here on conflict.
Yes, conflict.
You want to tell us a little bit about that topic?
Sure. So conflict is A tough one. I could have written a whole book on it. I think anyone could write a whole book on it. In the chapter, one of the things that I talk about is some ways to de-escalate your arguments. So there are a lot of things in the chapter about constructive and destructive conflict. But one of the tips I have is to de-escalate your conflict. And I think I give three ways that you can de-escalate. One of them being, if you are in a hellish argument with your partner, or, you know, you're just fighting about nothing and it's escalating out of control, spiraling out of control, you can take a 10-minute break. Okay, let's stop right here. Let's take a 10-minute or 10-hour or 10-day break and cool down and come back when we are refreshed. Now, I don't know about all of you, but breaks don't really work for me because all I can do during the break is think about the conflict. So break doesn't work for me. But another thing that you could do is a lot of times fights get so out of control that you don't even know what you're fighting about anymore. And that's a great time to stop the fight and de-escalate. So wait a minute. What are we even fighting about? Let's go through this problem by problem because I hope that we want the same thing. And what I want is to solve the problem. So let's go through problem by problem. That's another way to de-escalate. And then the last way, the way that works the best with my husband and I is, you know, wait a minute. I love you and you love me. Why are we talking to each other this way? We don't talk to each other like this way normally. You know, let's just calm down for a minute. Giving out a little compliment, I love you and I think you love me, that can usually calm things down pretty quickly, and it works for me. So de-escalating is one tip that I have for conflict interactions, but there are a lot more in that chapter. It's one of the longer ones too.
We did just get this question on our Facebook page from Tiffany that I think may relate to something that you were saying early in the hour, Craig Shealy. Her question, what advice can you give on how to deal with negative outside influences on your relationship, i.e. family members who do not approve of your mate, or friends whose personalities just clash.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it gets back to to Jenny's fundamental theme here about we're on the same team, that if you're in a relationship and that is not the most fundamental relationship you're in, that and that with your children if you have them, that's something to contemplate, because it means that there's space for you to get needs met, emotional and otherwise, through other loyalties, through other relationships that are going to only cause conflict for you and your partner, because they will feel that you're not on the same team. So I really endorse that point. That what do you do about it? You there are a lot of things to do about it. One thing, you voice that you're upset about it.
Stand up.
You stand up. You
stand up for your relationship to these third parties.
Another tip would be to add to the three that you offered. Would one of the fundamentals in this kind of work is use I statements. Don't tell the other person you feel this way or you are doing this to me. Instead, say I am feeling this way about X, or I am wondering why this thing is happening in the way that it is. The minute we get into situations where we're telling the other person this is what they're doing and why, we've already put them in a defensive posture relative to us. So if you don't like it that your partner is or family members are intruding or whatever, my advice would be, as long as there aren't any loaded guns and a lot of booze flowing around, my advice would be to tell them that. Say, I really wish that this weren't the way it is. I feel X as a result of this. And ultimately, over time, if others don't respect those kinds of boundaries, that is a fundamental question that you have to ask yourself about the nature of loyalty and connection and integrity in your relationships.
I'm sorry, we only have about a minute left. Jordan from Seville is on the line. Jordan, if you could make your question quick, please, that'd be a great help.
Sure. It's called the Five Languages of Love.
And love it.
We have a tendency to love others on our terms. As good intentioned as it is, it's not always effective. So we need to be able to have the foundation. In other words, we need to be able to feel confident and with ourselves, like the other caller said about being healthy, in order to express what our needs are and how we like to feel loved, and vice versa. We have to be receptive to our partner. And if it doesn't, if that's not possible, you know, if, let's say gift giving is a big one for a person, and the other person just doesn't have the wherewithal to do that, then you have to reevaluate, should I be in this? And and love is not always, you know, love is never enough, they say.
Jordan, I apologize for cutting you off, but thank you so much for giving us those final thoughts. As we complete, we've got maybe 20 seconds left for a final thought from Jenny, who we haven't heard for a few moments.
All right. So my final thought goes back to that running theme, the playing on the same team. You really have to, if this is the person that you want to commit yourself to, you need to be in it to win it and commit yourself and play on their team. Keep them in your thoughts all the time and have their back and stand up for them and play on their team.
Our guests have been blogger, author, and communication researcher Jennifer Gill Rozier. Her latest book titled Make Love, Not Scrapbooks, plus clinical therapist and psychology researcher Craig Sheely, executive director of the International Beliefs and Values Institute, both of our guests also faculty members at James Madison University. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight. Keep my